But growing up in it, it's just such a part of your livelihood that when I went off for a decade and explored and worked other careers, in the back of my mind, the pharmacy was always so important to me. And that's that passion I mentioned earlier. And within months of coming back to the business, I was like, this is what I'm going to
This is
do.
it.
I love
It's
this. I'm
cool.
so happy to be back. Yeah, such a huge part of me and my family's life that I just couldn't imagine it without it.
Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat, a podcast about today's biggest business issues told from a Chicagoland perspective. Good morning, Chicagoland. Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat. I'm Greg Bedloff, President and CEO of Choose DuPage, and your host for today's podcast. From mom-and-pop shops to global corporations, DuPage County is the home to thousands of businesses. Many have been in business for more than a decade, some have managed to last for 25 years, and a handful have actually made it to the 50-year mark. But only a proud few have been in business for more than 100 years. I like to call these businesses the Century Club, and today I'm joined by four folks who represent three businesses in this highly exclusive club. Jerry Hinckley is the fourth generation owner and president of St. Andrew's Golf and Country Club, which this year is celebrating 100 years in business. Anna and Susanna Ball are third and fourth generation owners, respectively, of Ball Horticultural Company, which is celebrating 120 years. Anna is also the company's CEO. And last but not least, Alex Anderson is the sixth generation owner. That's right, I said the sixth generation owner of Oswald's Pharmacy, which is celebrating an astounding 150 years in business. Jerry, Anna, Susanna, and Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you. Very good to be here.
I am literally honored and excited to have all of you in the studio with us this morning, and I'm sure our listeners are eager to hear your story, learn your experiences, and gain knowledge and insight of what it takes to keep a business around. But obviously, I have to start with a very simple question. In a word or two, or a sentence or two, what does it take to keep a family-owned business going for more than a century? And I'll start with you.
It's hard to put it in one or two words, but let me try. I think one thing that nobody likes to hear but is true is just luck, right? You have to be lucky. You have to be lucky in your timing. You have to be lucky in a lot of things. But the other thing, I think, is humility. That's something that we've been talking a lot about lately. Just being humble, I think, is really important, because if you're humble, then you're always looking. You don't think you know the answers, and, you know, it's not about you kind of thing. So I think humility is really, really one of the key things to staying in business for a long time.
Wonderful. I didn't expect that answer. I thought hard work and diligence and good, sound financial planning and everything. And again, I'm learning something right off the bat. Susanna, anything to add to your mom's comments on that?
I think you're right, Greg. I mean, I think dedication, hard work, you know, you have to have a family that generation after generation wants to be dedicated to the business. And that's just not very common, I think. I think you have to have that dedication. So I think that's really important as well.
What about you, Jerry? What's it take to keep a golf course going for 100 years, other than COVID and a resurgence in the golf industry and everything else?
Really, the ethos of just never quitting, because there's always obstacles, always challenges and reasons to sell, or, you know, other things to do. But if you're just come from a perspective that there isn't another option, then you just have to keep pressing forward. And more often than not, you find some solution that you maybe never envisioned.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes.
And 150 years of, what's it, six generations?
Well, I think Anna mentioned humility, and I think, you know, looking outside yourself and the business is care for us, like community care and being involved in your community, especially being a pharmacy, that's always been kind of front and center. So care for your community, care for your patients, care for your staff, and then passion. Like, it, you have to be passionate about what you do, and I think every generation of my family that I've known and heard about through family stories has been passionate about running the business, and that's been huge for me.
Okay, so I'm hearing a lot about generational and succession, and I'm assuming because of your successes in business that this may or may not have been an issue. But when I talk to other businesses, it's always kind of that second or third generation where there's that take the money and run attitude, or there is that I'm not as committed because I didn't found it. Did you guys have any kind of points along the way where you kind of thought, all right, well, grandpa, great grandpa, great grandma, somebody started this way, way, way a long time ago, and that next generation just doesn't look like they're up to the task? Were there any times in Ball or Oswald or St. Andrews where you guys kind of felt like, man, how did we survive through that era?
I wouldn't say from St. Andrews' perspective on the succession, but no. I think we've always just had the individual or individuals or family that just stepped up to keep things going. It's just we've been fortunate in that regard.
Okay.
As my brother says, none of my brothers and myself have had to go out and take just a lousy job that we didn't like and had passion. We always had the knowledge that if we needed to or wanted to, we could come back to St. Andrews and have that base. I chose to dig in and do this as my primary career, but my brothers have had successful careers outside. But it's a true blessing in a family business to have that security and operation and history to come back and coalesce around.
So, Alex, over six generations, there hasn't been one kind of black sheep that you guys were worried about to say, all right, business is in trouble here. We better bring old Yeller back and make sure that we've got everything stable?
Well, I think, you know, for the last, during the years of my ownership and my father's, both of us left the company and said we wouldn't get involved. And that was something, you know, growing up in a family business, my mom was always great. He's like, you don't have to do that. Don't feel mm-hmm. pigeonholed into running the business. But growing up in it, it's just such a part of your livelihood that when I went off for a decade and explored and worked other careers, in the back of my mind, the pharmacy was always so important to me. And that's that passion I mentioned earlier. And within months of coming back to the business, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I love this. I'm so happy to be back. It's such a huge part of me and my family's life that I just couldn't imagine it without it. So,
And I think it's safe to say that Ball is the only multinational member of our Century Club visit today. When you guys expanded overseas and when you guys went into China and into South America, did you ever have any concern of, wow, do we have the bandwidth to keep this in the family? And how are we going to survive if we get multinational to keep it a family-centered business?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. The company's always been international. Even my grandfather, he started it back 100 years ago. He was visiting other countries and trading. It's always been a very international business. So that's just part of our DNA. We don't really think about it that much. I think, you know, it's hard if you don't have a generation that's this interested, and that's why a lot of our customers who are family businesses, growers, that's why they go out of business, because they just don't have a succession. So they lose a generation and then it's over. Sometimes if you're big enough, you can get through one generation that isn't that interested and then get to the next one, but not really. So it's a big risk for family businesses.
Did you ever have an inkling of going off and saying maybe I'm thinking about a different path?
No, I mean, I think Alex said it perfectly. I mean, I did the same thing. I left for about 10 years, but yeah, it's just, it's always in your head somewhere that, you know, that's your legacy. That's sort of your I don't want to say your duty, but that's your...
Then your DNA, maybe.
Yeah, that's what you need to do, sort of. And so I think it's, you know, you go off and get some new experience, and I think that's great. But yeah, I mean, like he said, it's just always back there somewhere that you'll end up back. And I think it's, you know, having that feeling of that legacy, the what you can do for your employees, for your community, I think that's what really brings you back. It's not just the, you know, oh, I can get a good salary in the family business, right? It's really like that responsibility towards your customers, your suppliers, everybody kind of in your business ecosystem. So,
well, that's what Jerry mentioned with, you know, you have siblings who've done other, mm-hmm. you know, I've had careers outside the business. And yeah, I've got three siblings too that all, you know, have worked in the family business over the years. But, you know, for them necessarily that it wasn't that passion. They didn't want to come back. It is always an option. It's there. It's the family business. And I think the one who was the, you know, as a teenager and a young adult was the most like, I'm never going back to the family business. I turned out to be the most passionate about it of all. And I guess in my 20s, I did have a picture of the pharmacy hanging on my wall in every apartment I lived in
there
over the
go.
Many years. Cool. So it, like, I think it was always there.
That's
cool. I just needed to find, you know, get some experience elsewhere and then bring it back.
And has that experience that you gained elsewhere kind of been very helpful to how you run the business today?
Yeah, very much so. Just exploring different careers, working in marketing. I think that's maybe something we'll talk about later, but that was important to keep, you know, being an old business. A lot of people, especially people who have been in your communities for a while, well, your global community on your end, it's like, oh, everyone knows about your company. But no, times are always changing. Towns are very transient. People are coming and going. Industries are changing. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, my biggest challenge is staying on top of that and introducing new people to the business.
Rest on your laurels, gonna.
That's a great transition. Relevancy of maintaining a business profile and maintaining, you're still in business to make money, my assumption, and we still have to be relevant in an ever-changing economy. What have been some of the strategies that you have all used in terms of adaptability and changing to meet the current demands of the market?
My grandfather always would say that in his era, every 7 years, there's like the business looks almost nothing like it did before. And so that's been sort of an ethos that we've kept to just keep looking at as different trends are coming down the line, just to stay on the toes. Because 25, 30 years ago, we were an all cash business. And there was, yeah, there was almost zero technology. Now, if you don't have screens in your golf carts, if you don't have GPS, if you don't have online tee times, if you don't have everything out in the net and plugged in that way, you're nowhere. Or you're, you know, really a throwback business. Mm-hmm. And so those are all, and golf is a very traditional sport and it resisted things like that. But, you know, staying on top of those technologies and watching what's going. And another thing that some of my relatives have said is that if you travel around and see other businesses like yours, they always do something better than you do. You just have to find that one thing. It could be very small, but they do something that you could benefit from. So keep your eyes open. And that's just been a modus operandi for us to try to stay even or ahead of some of the competitors.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think we have the same sort of ideas that have been passed down from my grandfather and dad. And they were out, we call it, you know, are you a porch dog or a field dog, right? You got to be a field dog. You got to be out in the market all the time. And you can't just be out in the market, like visiting other golf courses or other companies, but you have to be, you know, have to learn to ask good questions and then listen and really, you know, synthesize things. And that's hard work. It's really hard work. But I think if you're out a lot, you have a much better chance of staying relevant. If you're really listening and observing and you're out in the market and you're dealing with customers and people and all sorts of things, that's really important. So I completely agree with you.
Well, and I promised before the podcast started, I promised Alex that we wouldn't talk about this, but as you guys just made that comment about staying relevant and being in the market and the changes and the challenges that are thrown in your face, you can't have a discussion about pharmacies today without talking about HMOs, PPOs, PBMs, and all of the things. You said a cash business. I'm old enough to remember going to the pharmacy with the script, handing it to the pharmacist. The pharmacist filled the script. How has, without getting super political or super into the weeds in terms of managed care and those things, what's that transition been like?
Well, I think there's almost like forced change. To maintain being a pharmacy, we have to change with the times and start working with the insurance companies and the PBMs. And, you know, it's talking to my grandfather about the industry when he was a pharmacist in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And it was like retail. You buy a pill for 5 cents, you sell it for 10. There wasn't all these middlemen. There weren't all these insurance companies. It was a completely different industry. Now, at the core of it, you're filling prescriptions, taking care of your customers, keeping them healthy. Being like the go-to source for community care. You don't have to book an appointment. You can just stop in your pharmacy and talk to your pharmacist. So that's always been there, but it's changed so wildly in everything else. And with that, reimbursements, we talk about we all got to be profitable to stay in business, and reimbursements in the pharmacy have dropped dramatically, both for chains and independents. And that field's gotten so much tougher. And talking about you know, we're all legacy businesses, so we've got those years behind us. It's like, what do you keep that you know is kept you afloat and people coming back to you over these years, and what do you change? And I think it's a balancing act of like respecting that legacy and everything the generations before you have done to keep the business afloat, but also you've got to change. And we've talked about, whenever I look at the generations, every generation in my family did something different to change the pharmacy and keep it relevant and keep it moving forward. And even, you know, before insurance made the pharmacy industry tough, the drugstore was changing. And my great-great-grandfather brought in the soda fountain. My great-grandfather got rid of that and brought in cosmetics. My grandfather shrunk the cosmetics and computerized the pharmacy. My father got rid of a lot of the more traditional stuff that the Walgreens and CVS's of the world were carrying, and we got really into toys and boutique items. And, you know, those, we just continue to evolve to find that niche that, you know, other businesses in the community aren't serving that is still kind of relevant to our core business model of being a pharmacy.
Did you bring back the soda fountain?
That is my lifelong goal.
Yay!
It's coming back.
All right.
I'll have a cherry fizzy.
I remember the soda fountains.
Yeah, lime Ricky.
Wonderful. Yep. Yes, and the growing up in the soda fountains were the best part of the pharmacy.
Yeah, I always longed for that. You know, something I never knew growing up, but I just, like, looking back at the old pictures, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. So I talking about looking at competitors and even inspirational other businesses in your field, that there's a handful of pharmacies that still do have soda fountains. So I'm very sure to keep an eye
good,
on them.
Good,
good. Cool. So we're recording our podcast today from College of DuPage, where business classes are held day in and day out. There's a lot of bright young minds here. They're affiliated with Choose DuPage, Innovation DuPage, businesses that are being cultivated, incubated, business plans. I want to shift to business plans for a second. Do any of you have connections back far enough in the generations when your businesses were started? Did somebody sit down and write a business plan, or was it more there was a need, let's fill the need? And if that is the case, has there been the need, as your businesses aged and evolved, for you to do more formal business planning for growth into the future? So, you know, did your great, I think it was your grandfather, started the business, mm-hmm. Anna? Did he sit down and say, I'm going to pencil out a business plan and I'm going to shop it and I'm going to get venture capital to come and invest in it?
No, of course not. Of course not. And I have an extreme view of plans, so maybe I should be on this
podcast. Oh, now we're getting into it. Let's hear your extreme
view. No, of course, my grandfather did not have a grand vision. He did not have a plan. He just, you know, like a lot of entrepreneurs, he just started. And I think planning is we're not big planners. I'm not a big planner. I think plans can really be dangerous if you set a formal plan and then you try to stick to it. And as everybody has said here, things change all the time, and you try to stick to that plan, that can be deadly, actually. So plans can be dangerous if they're adhered to too strictly. And I believe in instead of planning, and of course we do plan, but we don't put a lot of effort into it, and we don't do long-term plans because they're useless, because everything changes. So what we try to do is really have the best people that we can have, the most resilient people, the people that can change, systems that are good, and just things that can go any way that the market wants you to go. So sort of build up the means instead of having a sort of a long-term plan. So that's our strategy. We're not big long-term planners.
Yeah. We're no more than a couple of years out. We do budgeting and things like that, because you have to have a scorecard offer on a monthly basis and things of that nature. But to your point, the long-term plans, long-term plannings they're going to change. But we just really want to succeed. And really, for us, it's to generate as much cash and cash flow as we can. Cash flow, security, options, all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Not being a slave if there's a COVID event. We can survive those things events.
This is great, but I think when some of the professors at the college and some of the other brilliant business minds around academia hear this, they're going to, this is really insightful. Yeah. What about from the pharmacy's perspective?
Yeah, I think that business planning, like we've worked with business coaches and, you know, had 1, 3, 5-year plans, but my 5-year plan in 2019 didn't look anything like we thought it would. And that's, I think, being a small business, that gives us that opportunity to be nimble and turn on a dime, which is so essential in what all of us have done over the generations to maintain relevancy or keep doing what the generation before you did well and just and carry that on. And that, and that's, it's, well, I think planning is important, especially fiscally. Mm-hmm. So maybe the professors will like that. We need to plan fiscally.
Well, I'm hearing a lot of, like, forecasting is important, mm-hmm. right? You have to know how to buy things. You have to know how to manage payroll and everything else.
You have to have a budget, and you have to have at least a one-year plan. I mean, yeah. Obviously, but.
Okay. And from the financial perspective, Susanna, as the next generation at Ball, how do you, what does your company do? What do you guys do from a resiliency perspective to address economic trends? I mean, I don't know how COVID per se, we all think of COVID and how it impacted the restaurant industry and how it impacted retail and how it impacted hybrid versus remote. But for a horticultural seed company, had to be a little bit of a curveball that was thrown your way. What do you guys do to kind of assure that financial resiliency?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of our big kind of core sort of financial mantras, or however you want to say it, is just to not have long-term debt. So that's been kind of a consistent rule that we've followed for decades and decades, is just kind of like my mom was saying earlier, just having that resilience, right? If you don't have a ton of debt, you can be nimble, you can make changes, you're not sort of stuck paying off this debt. So I think that's kind of our main sort of financial planning, I guess, in a very long-term kind of way, is just avoiding that debt. And then you have flexibility, right? Then if a big opportunity comes up or the market shifts in some way, you're ready to respond to it. So,
what about you guys, Jer?
I would say the same thing. We're debt averse. I mean, we were born shortly before the Depression. My great grandfather, the golf course was the only thing he could hang on to. He was very successful as a business person in Chicago with a number of different things. Stetson Shoe Company, he was a major owner in that, and other rail cars. And when the Depression hit, he was able to hang on to St. Andrews. And so, and then my grandfather, Joe Jemsick, through the Depression, hearing those stories, those are just burned into the memory. And, you know, if it can happen once, it can happen again, and we don't want to let the prior generations down by blowing it. So we've always maintained a very conservative posture on debt and cash flow and how we spend money and things of that nature. And we don't try to pull a lot of money out. We try to keep a very healthy liquidity, and that's really has served us well. And we haven't grown like other companies, and we're also not looking for outside investors, which if you do that, I think you do need long-term planning. You need a long-term vision and a roadmap for what they're doing. But for the family, you sort of breathe it and live it and have experienced it, and they all sort of get that, yeah, that posture.
And Alex, I'm sure I'm probably not evaluating every option here, but as I think of the businesses here in the Century Club today, your business is probably the most impacted by online retail. I mean, people buy toys online. Mm-hmm. You mentioned toys. People buy anything else that you can typically get off of a shelf online. I know you guys at Ball do some stuff online, but I would think that your business, so from a financial resiliency perspective, how does this new internet e-commerce world, well, and pharmacy, right? I mean, every time you can get your prescriptions online now, can't you?
Yeah, you can get everything online.
Yeah,
and that's
well, you can't play golf online. You can, but it's not quite the same experience.
Yeah, I don't think that's too comparable right now.
But how does that online presence impact you?
Yeah, it's funny because we just talking about COVID, like through that, our online presence got quite robust. We started offering a lot more of our OTCs and toys and games online. You can already refill prescriptions online. We've done deliveries for going back to my great-great-grandfather. So there's that element that we've been there doing. But it's funny, as the COVID era kind of calmed down, less and less people shopped online. And our sales have still been going up. There's still people coming in our doors, but that's something I need to think about, is as more and more people shop online. And that's thinking about changing our product selection to work with more vendors that are local, stuff you can't find online. There's a growing contingent of companies that they pride themselves not found on Amazon. Like, you have to find it in my store. Mm-hmm. And then it's doing a lot of Naperville, Chicagoland merchandise that's exclusive to us, talking about the soda fountain, like experiential, mm-hmm. you know, right. as more and more stuff is done online, you want that experience in person, mm-hmm. like going golfing at a lovely golf course or coming into a store that's curated for you. You're not going onto a website typing in birthday gift for 3-year-old and you can sort through 10,000 items. How about the ones that our experts have curated and you got 50 options over 10,000. And sometimes I think people are appreciating that, but you know, I can't, like the previous generations of my family, I can't just sit idly by and say we're not going to get involved with anything online. We have, and we probably will again more robustly as time goes on. But the goal to me is keeping the in-store shopping experience so unique that it's something that is more and more stores closed, people are excited to come in because it is truly an experience, not like going to a chain drugstore. It's a whole different beast.
Yeah.
I've heard it said that there's no such thing as inertia in business. You're either moving forward or you're moving backward, but you're certainly not standing still, because if you're standing still, you're probably moving backwards. What does expansion look like for in the next 5 to 10 years for a family-owned pharmacy, for a family-owned golf course? Jerry, if you put another 27 holes out there, I'd be one happy camper because I could have more options to play. But how do you balance expansion, and what does expansion look like for your three businesses?
I'm not looking to grow dramatically. I don't want to be a chain drugstore. I don't think that's ever been in our family's DNA. There has been expansion over the years. My great-grandfather opened the bookshop that now my aunt runs in the 60s. We expanded into medical equipment in the last decade. I opened a second medical equipment store 3 years ago, and that's where that's kind of the cash flow that's shrunk, sadly, in the pharmacy industry. How can I offset that? Mm-hmm. And medical equipment kind of seemed it's adjacent to the pharmaceutical industry. You're helping the community in a way that I talked about, finding those niche opportunities, mm-hmm. and that's something we've always sold. I just found a cool advertisement from my great-great-grandfather's era in the Naperville newspaper that said, we rent and sell wheelchairs, crutches. Cool. And so it's something we've always been doing, but let's dive into that a little deeper and have a better selection for our customers.
So tangential to your core business is where you're expanding.
Yeah, and that's like our gift and toy selection has expanded dramatically as toy stores and gift stores have closed. So it's finding like where are those spaces that you're still relevant, it's part of your core business, not straying too far, and offering something that there's not many other businesses offering, especially in a brick and mortar setting.
Okay. In a non brick and mortar setting, when you're pastoral and you know, the golf industry goes through contractions and expansions, what does expansion look like for St. Andrews?
Well, I think St. Andrews is the home base, and then looking to maybe out not too far away for expansion opportunities. I think we're in a good space for that now. But internally, because we have the driving range and practice facility business, which we've expanded quite a bit.
Spectacularly, I might add.
And thank you. And with the golf course, we're constantly making improvements. But we also have a banquet facility business, and we have a tavern business, bar business, and a la carte food business. So those things, as one is maybe a little bit more on the upswing and another is a little bit more challenged, we start investing in those different areas. So it does keep us pretty busy on that, but we would like to expand in this region, I think, because then we can leverage the family feel. I do, coming from a family business perspective, I think people generally like working with family businesses. If you give good hospitality
Midwest,
and customer
right?
service,
I mean,
it's, you know, if you talk to the person that can write the check or can make the decision or, you know, give some advice, I think people do appreciate that. Because we're certainly not corporate.
We're serving families, right? I think all of our businesses, you know, the pharmacy, you talked about it, the golf course, you know, people have memories of, you know, going with their kids. And, you know, a lot of our customers, like we mentioned earlier, are family businesses themselves. So I think you're absolutely right. People want to have that. People want to know that they're dealing with a family company, that they can call up the owner and something goes wrong and they'll be there and they'll be available. So I think that's a super important, like, to keep that feeling, you know.
Yeah. What I think is more businesses get more and more consolidated and grow, and talking about mergers and acquisitions, and as they get bigger, like we're seeing a huge upswing in our prescription count the last 2 years because of the changes in chain pharmacy, and everyone's not ready for mail order internet pharmacy, and our customer count has grown more than in the last 2 years than it has in the last 2 decades.
That's great.
Because it's so good to hear, isn't it?
Yeah, because of that change where people want great service and the feedback we get online and in reviews. And it's like, it's so heartwarming because it's like, this is what we've always done. And it's so nice for people to find that again, especially younger generations who didn't even know it ever existed. Mm-hmm. They've just grown up with chain corporate stores.
They'll learn eventually, Alex.
That's the idea. Vinyl that's records. Our mission.
They're back. They're back.
Jerry, I always tell my friends who are in golf nuts like me, three most important words in golf are practice, practice, practice. Generally stated, the three most important words in real estate or a business maybe, location, location, location. Let's talk a little bit about location and how it's served you and how you've grown. And clearly, selfishly, you're all gratefully in DuPage County, where we hope you stay and prosper for many years. How has the location been and how has the growth been to suit your needs from employment, from transportation, from everything? Let's maybe start with you.
Yeah, I mean, we started 120 years ago also in DuPage County, and it really was all location. So where we started was right along the rail line because we were harvesting flowers and shipping them into downtown Chicago. And, you know, it's a perishable product. You can't be trucking it, you know, 10 miles to the depot or whatever. You have to be right on the rail line. And then when we moved in the 20s, again, we just followed the rail line a little bit further west, got a little bit more land. And so that sort of having that central location to Chicago and also within the country has just been super important to us all along.
Yeah, really. We moved from Glen Ellen to West Chicago.
Yeah.
And I think also when we are trying to hire people from outside of the region, like from the East Coast or the West Coast, we talk a lot about, especially if they have families, we talk a lot about the forest preserve and
the trail system.
DuPage County, the trail system. That is very attractive to people, and the schools, of course. But it's amazing how many people we had a guy from Australia that we hired, and he said that the Glen Ellen Park District was bigger and better than the whole park district of the second biggest city in Australia, Melbourne. He was astounded when he moved here. So
that's going on our website.
There's a lot of attractions of DuPage County, and it's easy to get people to move here, actually, because of all the things that DuPage has.
You guys have been in the region for a long time.
Yeah, it's doing business in DuPage has always been, you know, it's never easy and never perfect, but DuPage County has always been, I think, supportive of businesses. And Chicago in general has a long history of being a can-do location. I mean, you know, if it's, you know, it was a city that didn't stop if it snowed. It was always a place that brought in all kinds of businesses and all kinds of people. And I think as the area has grown, DuPage County has focused on, you know, trying to attract businesses large and small. The infrastructure has been good. I think it's been a favorable business environment, which has been very helpful overall. And I think they've supported the economy well, and we live and breathe in that economy. And that's been, you know, super beneficial. It doesn't happen in all locations, I can tell you.
Yeah, it's very intentional. And Alex, other than not enough parking in downtown Naperville and way too much traffic on Main Street, which I don't want to go to a restaurant where I can get a table right away. What are your thoughts? You're in the middle of downtown Naperville.
So that's where we were
right
until 2004. And, you know, and that's something like you mentioned, how you moved down the rail line to West Chicago. And it's like, and yeah, that's one of those big changes you have to make, where downtown Naperville is still wonderful, such a shopping destination and a restaurant destination, but for a service-oriented business, being a pharmacy, we needed somewhere with a little more parking. But we could just move just a mile down the street, and we're still in a very, you know, populous area. It's very busy. We're still really close to downtown. But when you become a destination store, and that's kind of that growth into the medical equipment sector, is people travel from further away for those things that are unique to you that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's kind of a callback to talking about the internet. And that's, you know, generations of pharmacists that have worked for us have been educated here and wanted to stay in the area and have found their way to Oswald's.
I always want to do one of these podcasts without bringing up AI, but then my guests always say something that makes me think of something
can
that
you
I
just go for one day without talking about AI.
we can, but we'll be quick. Is it impacting your business, and is it a challenge, an opportunity, both?
It has to be impacting it because it's top of mind for everybody. I'm not sure we've seen it fully, but I mean, we do have point of sale systems, we do have reservation systems, our marketing. It's coming in with all the vendors that, you know, they're trying and using it. I just don't know that it's where exactly it's landed. You know, someday if it helps people learn and play golf better and they'll enjoy it more, that could be fantastic. So it can be, it's an exciting thing.
Okay.
I think it's a little question mark.
I think I'm sure we can all attest that running a small business, we wear so many hats, and running, like even our website, we'll use a little bit of it to help create content, to help do something that used to take 5 hours to get the metadata and the alt text for pictures. Just the stuff that was just this mundane task that would take hours. Now you can do it so much quicker. So for small things like that, it helps. I haven't really seen how it's going to factor in, especially in the pharmacy industry. I'm sure that'll change, where you have like robot pill counters that can take pictures and things like that, where AI has kind of been here for years. I think it's just in the news way too much, as I think you can agree with, that it's we're taking something that's already kind of been here and just it's kind of a bubble right now that everyone's okay. talking about, but it hasn't impacted us too dramatically as of late, but it's only a matter of time before it's quite ubiquitous.
Anna, since you don't want to talk about it, Susanna, what are you thinking regarding
that? I mean, I think a lot of what we do is very agricultural, right? So we grow a lot of plants, and I think there's some really, really interesting stuff kind of coming now about sort of forecasting and predictions with weather and humidity and temperature and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's going to be really exciting if we can, you know, get our forecasting better, because we have to plan like 18 months out, right? So it can be kind of a crapshoot. But I think having that kind of predictive ability, I think is very, very exciting. So I think that's an exciting space.
And I think for all of us being older businesses, of course, you look at AI, I'm like, I don't want it. Not kind of this newfangled technology, where we've also talked about how we've all changed with the times, and it's like it's essential to at least look into it, see what's going on, see what can benefit us. So, okay. You know, I'm not going to kick it to the curb. You got to keep an eye on it. And when it will benefit us, and when it's something that I know will make us a better company and we're not cutting corners because of it, then it's something we'll explore.
Last couple of questions. Challenges. What are you laying awake at night worrying about these days? What's your on the horizon? And no holds barred. Anything from transportation, taxes, politics. What's of concern for you to maintain a century-old business for another century?
I would say affordability for housing and just a basic middle-class living in the area is important to us. We have a lot of seasonal folks. We have a lot of folks who are recent retirees who work for us. You know, as a smallish business, we can't pay, you know, everybody a super high wage, and but we need a lot of people. And so that's a concern, that it's getting tougher. We've heard from a lot of our employees that their rents are going up quite a bit. The housing growth is slow. That's one of our big today challenges.
Love it. And I think Chair Conroy would love to have a conversation with you about that very topic. Alex?
Yeah, I think on that side, where like golfing, it's a form of entertainment. A lot of the stuff we sell, you know, we're the pharmacy side of the business, it's a necessity. But the softer goods side, that whole experiential side I was talking about, yeah, it's more of a luxury. It's not a need to have item. So yeah, worried about, you know, economic changes where there is less for extra money, expendable income to use on entertainment and stuff like that. And then I think for us working in the pharmaceutical industry, PBMs, as we discussed, working with Medicare, Medicaid, you've got the government that could change something that's completely out of your control with reimbursements, and then just dealing with chains and that the changing economy of more businesses moving online, and people can do so much online, we're doing more online, but then when do we make that pivot to have a part of our pharmacy totally online? Do we, or can we maintain the business the way it is? And it's just kind of always keeping your fingers on the pulse of what's happening in your industry. And yeah, it's tough because you don't know what'll change, but I think that's what we've all spoken to, is that when things change, we're ready to adapt to it.
What about you guys? What are you worried about? What's your
I was going to say what Jerry did, affordability of housing is a big thing for our employees in West Chicago, because we're right on the edge. So a lot of them are moving out west, getting more land for less money. And of course, we want them all to stay around West Chicago. But that's an issue with employees. I agree with you on that.
Last question. What sage advice from nearly 500 years, 400 years, of combined cumulative business experience, what advice would you guys give the kid sitting in the classroom right now at College of DuPage thinking about starting up his or her own business?
I would say go for it. Start, if you have a real passion for it, you have to be competent. But I would say if you want to start a business, then you should do it. But from our standpoint, my standpoint today is to really know your customers, stay really engaged with your customers. They tell you every transaction almost what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong. Also your employees, and then also the community leaders, because they should know what you're doing. You should know what they're doing. But between those three groups, if you're plugged into those, the employees, the customers, and the community leaders, you're going to know your market. You're going to know who's helping you out every day, and your loyal staff, and then your customers are going to give you the feedback that you need to keep getting more customers.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Alex.
I think that's great advice. I think something that I've thought a lot about with this, talking with all of you, like there's been generations of our family that have come before us doing this, and whether you're going to a business that's already up and running, maybe not necessarily family, is learning as much as you can from those who have already been there. Mm-hmm. And whether if you're starting from the ground up, joining, industry trade organizations that are in that, because I've looked back at my generations, I've worked with my dad for a decade now. He worked with his dad for over a decade. He worked with his father-in-law for over 15 years. Like there's been so much overlap in each generation of my family that I think that's so beneficial if you have that opportunity, especially with family, to get to work alongside your family and learn from them. But if that's not an opportunity to learning from who's come before you, whether it's at the business you're going to work in or if you're starting a business from the ground up, finding someone who has that experience that you can really pick their brain and learn a lot from.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of saying the same thing. I was going to say learn to ask really good questions and then listen to the answers. And I think what that says to me is get help. Go out and ask for help. And, whether it's being out with the customers or learning from whatever. I mean, it's really important to listen and to ask advice and to listen to the answers. And I'm just amazed at the people who don't ask questions. I don't know. That's the way you learn. And so learn how to ask good questions. Learn how to listen to the answer. Think about it and be out there asking the right questions to the right people and accepting help.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, right, it's just, be kind, be a good person. You there's this whole persona in the world of like the CEO is like this ruthless corporate business person. But I mean, none of us made it 100 years by being a ruthless whatever. Take your pick of the CEOs of the world, right? So just don't fall into that trap of sort of thinking that business has to be this hard, aggressive sort of
mindset. None of us are trying to move fast and break things.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You just got to go slow. You got to be kind. You got to listen. You got to listen to your customers. And I think that's key. And I think a lot of what kids see nowadays is not that, right? So I think that's really important to understand.
That's fantastic. That's great advice from four great business leaders. And that's it for today's show. So Jerry, Anna, Susanna, and Alex, thank you so much for joining me. And as always, thank you to the College of DuPage for supporting today's episode. To keep up with what's happening in DuPage County and the Chicagoland region, follow Choose DuPage on social media or visit choosedupage.com. I'm Greg Budlove. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the DuPage Business Beat.